wasn't sure. Nor was she sure what drove her next actions, but something did, and she let whatever it was have its way. She left her chair and dropped to one knee in front of Gina's chair. The surface of the concrete dug into her skin, but she didn't care. She took Gina's other hand, so that she held them both. She looked into Gina's eyes, and before she gave herself time to consider what she was doing, she blurted, "Gina Luisa Morelli, will you marry me, Meg Anders Talmadge?" She kissed first one of Gina's hands, then the other. "Or be with me in some reasonable substitute of that arrangement?" Gina stared at her for a long moment, and Meg held her breath again, waiting for the world to either explode or collapse. When Gina finally spoke, her voice quavered, "Yes." The sound of that one word completely realigned Meg's world, knocked her from past to present, opened doors to the future, and kickstarted her heart. Gina pulled her hands free of Meg's and cupped Meg's face. "A million times, yes. A zillion. God, yes. I, Gina Luisa Morelli, will marry you, Meg Anders Talmadge, and civilly unionize, domestically partner, whatever we can get. Yes." She leaned her forehead against Meg's. "Oh my God, I can't believe this." She started laughing, then crying, and she pulled Meg, who was still on her knees against her, and buried her face in Meg's hair. She pulled away and searched Meg's face with her gaze. "Are you sure?" she asked, wiping tears from her face. She gently wiped Meg's cheek. Meg hadn't realized she was crying too. "Completely. I don't know how I know. I just do. I've never been more sure in my life." "Oh my God," Gina said again. She cupped Meg's face again. "Oh my God, I just want to run down the street banging on doors. I want to take out an ad. Shit, put this on a billboard and call everybody I know." She kissed Meg gently for a long, delicious moment before slowly pulling away to look at her again. "But I think right now I'd rather just take you back to bed. Time enough for news later. That's okay with you." She smiled in that way she had, in that way that sent lightning through Meg's abdomen and chills up her thighs. "Hell yes." Meg stood and brushed her knees off. She pulled Gina to her feet and started toward the house, but Gina held her back. "I love you, Meg Anders Talmadge." Meg smiled, and another tear coursed down her cheek. "I love you back, Gina Luisa Morelli." She said yes. Gina had said yes. Oh my God. Gina pulled her close and kissed her. She slid her hands up Meg's back, beneath her teeth and down again, easing her fingers past the waistband of Meg's shorts. "Damn," Meg whispered against Gina's lips as her knees weakened at Gina's touch. "What'll the neighbors think?" she teased, her breathing speeding up as Gina traced circles on her ass with her fingertips. "That you asked me to marry you and I said yes," Gina said, as she slowly moved her hands up Meg's back, then with a sigh, stepped away and started toward the patio door. She pulled Meg with her. "Since you're making an honest woman of me, want to stay over?"
"I'll make more than that out of you," Meg shot back.
"I like how that sounds," Gina said in a low voice. She took Meg's hand and drew her into the bedroom. Chapter 37.
"Well, howdy,"
Sean threw the front door open.
"When did your flight get in?"
"A couple hours ago. I'm technically on the way home. Do you have some time?" Meg asked. She held up a six-pack of Fat Tire beer.
"Well, duh. It's Sunday, the day after a holiday, and Ted's out and about. Get in here."
"Where is he?" Meg asked as she came in. Sean rolled her eyes.
"Please, golfing."
Meg laughed. "Really? Or is he just driving around in that cart with clubs and a beer?"
"That's more likely. He likes to go do that man stuff with some of his college buddies."
"Since when is golfing man stuff?"
"No, silly. Driving an electric go-kart around a manicured lawn with a beer."
"Whatever. We've done that." Sean giggled and gave Meg a hug.
"Don't tell the men folk that."
She pulled Meg to the kitchen.
"The dogs are outside and they will stay there because I know they will love to see you and will bury you in a pile of doggy goodness. Unfortunately for them, I want you to myself for a bit."
Meg handed her the six-pack.
"Open a couple of these." "Most definitely."
Sean took two bottles from the six-pack and put the rest in the fridge. She opened one for Meg and handed it to her, then opened another for herself. Meg took it and sank down in one of the kitchen table chairs. Sean sat down next to her.
So, how was it? How's Gina?
Meg cleared her throat. Heat rushed across her face.
Holy Mary, Mother of God, what is going on? Did you get into a bad patch of Mexican food? Girl, you look like you're about to pass out.
Sean half laughed, but her tone broadcast concern. She put her beer down. Meg put hers down too.
I wanted you to be the first one I told outside family, and I wanted to do it in person.
Sean's eyes widened.
What? Meg, what's going on?
I asked Gina to marry me.
Sean's jaw dropped.
And she said yes.
Meg flushed again at the memory and felt like she might hyperventilate.
Oh my God, we announced it to her parents and the whole family is celebrating. I called my dad and told him, and Gina talked to him. Oh my God, Sean, I can't find my ass right now with two hands and a scope.
Give me your phone,
Sean said softly, eyes still wide. Obediently, Meg pulled it out of her back pocket and handed it over. Sean dialed a number and waited.
Hi, honey, she said. It's not Meg, but she has to tell you something anyway. I'm putting her on.
Sean handed the phone to her.
Hi, Ted, it's Meg.
What's up?
He sounded concerned.
I asked Gina to marry me, and she said yes.
Pause.
Are you serious? Oh my God, Meg, that's awesome. When? Where? Details.
Meg laughed.
We haven't quite gotten that far, but Gina said she wants to have a ceremony at the DR. You guys are invited.
She stood and started pacing.
Well, duh!
Sean practically yelled as Ted started laughing in Meg's ear.
Hell yeah, Ted whooped. Congratulations. Are you doing formal invites?
Meg ran a hand through her hair.
Gina's mom is all about that, but I think Gina can rein her in. I don't know. I just asked on Friday. Well, technically it was Saturday, and we spent all day Saturday telling people.
I called my dad, and he talked to Gina's mom, and it's been insane. I'm a total basket case.
It couldn't happen to better people. I'm so glad for you. I'm going to hang out with you because I know Sean wants to throw a fit about it. Keep us posted. Bye.
Bye. Meg hung up and stared at Sean. Seriously, I'm totally beyond help. I'm not sure I can find my way home. I'm surprised I found my way here.
Sean got up out of her chair and threw herself into Meg's arms.
I am so proud of you, she said, and I'm getting all choked up.
She pulled away and wiped her eyes.
Fuck, I want to know exactly how it happened. Can you stick around?
Meg grinned.
Sure. Technically, I have tomorrow off, so... Oh my God! Slumber party! You are so staying here tonight, and we're having a pre-bachelor party.
Sean stood regarding her.
Meg, I am so happy for you right now. I feel like I could, I don't know, burst, cry, jump up and down. Fuck!
She hugged Meg again.
Oh my God!
She wiped her eyes again.
Who else have you told?
Just family. I'll be announcing to my other friends as I wrap my brain around it all. I'm still kind of floating.
So for real? How do you feel?
Like it was the right thing to do. Everything just fell into place.
Sean gave her another hug.
Oh my God, I cannot even, I am so excited. Let's get a bucket of fried chicken and a bunch of ice cream and celebrate.
Meg laughed. I'm so glad you're looking out for my health with those dietary choices.
Fuck it. This is momentous. This is the most amazing news ever. Now come on, fried chicken and more beer while we're at it. Let me get my shoes on.
She turned suddenly.
And I want to talk to Gina.
What for?
To congratulate her, duh. And besides, she's going to be my sister-in-law of sorts.
She left and Meg stared after her, then pumped her fist in the air.
Yes,
she said. Meg finished her part of the paper, saved it, and emailed it to Sean. She checked her watch. Nearly 9 her time. She and Gina generally talked around 10 her time, though lately they've been talking quite a bit. Meg grinned, and it was never enough as far as she was concerned. It had been nearly 2 weeks since the 4th. She'd go back for another visit in a week, not only to see Gina, but to sit down with her and Marcella to discuss the commitment ceremony and other things, like when Gina could move to Laramie. Gina's decision, no hesitation, she'd come to Laramie. Meg leaned back, staring at the ceiling. So what if it wasn't an actual marriage? It felt like one. It'd be great for their union to be legal, for them to get recognition under the law. But somehow doing it in spite of that sat right with her.
Gina had already suggested getting legally hitched in Canada, though it wouldn't transfer to the U.S., or Massachusetts, or Iowa, or the other two states that allowed marriage. It wouldn't transfer to Wyoming, but hopefully someday soon that would change. Meg was already trying to figure out when a good time for a marriage in a state that allowed it might be. Who knew she'd be such a big old marriage softie? She glanced over at Moonshine, who was dozing on his blanket near the door. She pushed away from her desk to get him up and take him outside when her home phone rang. She checked the caller ID and groaned aloud. Irene. She ran through her options as the phone rang a second time. Let the answering machine pick it up? Answer and say she's busy? Answer and hang up really quickly? Ignore it and pretend she never got the message? It rang a third time. Meg reached over and answered, deciding to take a gut shot. She hadn't spoken to Irene in a while, and her dad would hear about it and gently remind her to call her mom. Hi, Mom, what's up? Her response must have caught Irene off guard, because only silence greeted her. Meg? Yeah? What's going on? Kind of late for you, isn't it? Nearly 11 for Irene, and she generally never called past 8 mountain time. Maybe a little. And then she launched into her usual spiel, and now she's been doing this, that, and the other, and Ed's doing such and such, and why doesn't she hear more from Meg? Breathy sigh. Sounds like you're busy. That's good. Meg remained casual, waiting for her mother to get to the point, because calling at this hour meant she had one.
Well, I ran into Phil the other day, and I found out that he's actually moving to Colorado. And he mentioned that, well, that he and his fiancée are planning a visit to the ranch.
Yeah, he told me he wanted to bring Alicia up.
I didn't realize he was engaged,
Irene said. A hint of indignation, but maybe a little bit of contriteness, too. Well, Phil and I had a nice talk when he was here in May, and I knew he was. Meg kept her tone level, wondering what Irene was up to.
Ed says Phil's father isn't pleased about it.
Meg could visualize her, drumming her perfectly manicured fingernails on whatever perfectly polished furniture was within reach. Phil figured he wouldn't be.
Ed says Wayne, that's Phil's father, got so angry when Phil finally told him that he threw him out of the house. Then Wayne drank himself into the next day and told Ed he was cutting Phil out of the will.
Irene's tone was hushed, as if she was trying to pass a secret in a library.
That's pretty harsh, Meg said. And actually, Mom, it's none of my business. If I want to know what happened, I'll ask Phil. But you're telling me this why?
Well,
she said in her normal voice, forgetting perhaps about the overdone Kentucky drawl.
After Phil said he wanted to take his fiancée,
she has a name. It's Alicia.
Fine, she snapped. As I was saying, after Phil said he wanted to take her to the ranch, I went online, thinking I could pass along some open days for him.
I think Phil's perfectly capable of calling Dad or emailing him about that, or checking the DR's event schedule online by himself.
Do you mind? Irene responded, irritated. May I continue?
Meg waited.
I saw something there that made me a little upset, Irene said.
Meg sat up straighter.
Which was?
Her mom probably snooped all the time on the DR's site. She was just using Phil as an excuse. Irene was quiet for a very long time, but Meg heard her breathing.
I thought about calling your father, Irene finally said, and demanding that he take this bit of news off the website, but realized that it's his site, and I don't really have the right to do that. So I decided to approach you about it.
News? Meg went cold. Oh, shit. The commitment ceremony. She hesitated, trying to choose her words carefully before she spoke, trying not to just hang up. Are you referring to my upcoming commitment ceremony?
How could you do this to me?
Irene said, hurt and disgust in her tone.
How could you broadcast your unnatural lifestyle to the public like that?
There it was, out there for all to see. And though Meg knew Irene harbored thoughts like that, hearing them hurt, cut deep. She closed her eyes and took a deep breath, hurt and anger jockeying for expression. I'm going to pretend I didn't hear that. She took another deep breath. And it has nothing to do with you. It does, however, have everything to do with me and Gina.
It's an embarrassment,
Irene practically wailed.
What will my friends think, my relatives? I haven't even told Ed about it.
She drew her breath in sharply, and Meg held the phone and stared at it, as if she didn't know what it was before she put it back to her ear. They can think whatever the hell they want. And if they're going to judge you based on something you're not even doing, then they're not really your friends, are they?
How dare you? How dare you say that? You know nothing about me.
Her tone was clipped and bitter. Anger wrapped around Meg's esophagus like barbed wire. And why is that, Mom? You just told me how unnatural I am. I think that pretty much says how you feel about me and my relationship with Gina. So how the hell would I be able to get past that to find out who you are?
I knew I shouldn't have let you stay with your father.
Irene's voice inched up a register.
No girl should be raised by a man alone. You wouldn't have turned out like this.
Meg clenched her teeth. She would not allow Irene to see how pissed she was.
Stop it. Go after me all you want, but you will not insult Dad. He did the best he could.
And he raised a damn fine daughter without your help. Your issue is with me. Keep it there.
If you would just come with me, I'd still be gay. I don't need to hear this, Irene said. Of course you don't.
And you've never expressed much interest in me anyway. But I put up with your unending assaults on my dignity, with your asinine homophobia, and your ridiculous attempts to set me up with every man you see. And tonight, I had to endure you telling me how unnatural I am. I'm over it.
Don't you talk to me like that.
Irene's tone could have sliced meat. Then don't talk to me like I'm something distasteful. And don't pretend that I'm something I'm not. One, I'm not straight. Two, I asked Gina to marry me. She's the person I will be sharing my life with.
Silence. Meg imagined Irene as a deer in headlights. Irene started, but Meg interrupted, wanting to control the conversation and, by extension, her own anger. Her words came in a rush, like a dam breaking.
Yeah, I know, Meg said. People like me don't have that right. We're evil and bad and not good enough for that. That's bullshit. And I don't care what you think. I don't care what all your friends say about people who aren't like them. I asked Gina to marry me, and she said yes, and it was the most amazing moment of my life. And it won't be legal in most places in this country, and we still won't have the same rights you do, but we're having a ceremony anyway, because there are lots of people in our lives who care about us and want us to be happy, including Dad and Gina's family. They want to participate in a ceremony, even though legally it means nothing, thanks largely to ignorance like yours.
You can't talk to me,
and don't pull your born-again crap on me. Jesus didn't discriminate. He didn't tell anyone that they couldn't sit with him or talk to him because they were black or gay or lepers.
Meg stood and paced. The angrier she got, the steadier her voice sounded, and she was glad for it.
You've got a lot of nerve talking about Jesus,
Irene said in an icy tone Meg had never heard her use. No, you've got a lot of nerve running around disrespecting people in Jesus' name.
You wait.
Meg said it in such a way that it silenced Irene. You need to hear this. I know you know Alicia's black. Phil told me about Wayne. He told me what was at stake in his relationship. He told me what he risked losing because he loves Alicia. And he didn't think twice about it. He's giving up a hell of a lot to be with her. But he's doing it because he knows that he needs to live his life for himself. And because he knows he loves her. Jesus talked a lot about love and forgiveness. He talked a lot about loving your neighbor as yourself. Phil's dad is probably in the process of disowning him right now, writing him out of the will because his son fell in love with someone he doesn't approve of. Is that something Jesus encouraged people to do? Disown their family members for loving?
That's different, she said, anger in her own voice. Completely different.
How? It's racist. How is that different than homophobia? Both take things away from people. Both denigrate people. Both hurt. Phil and I have a lot in common. We both get shit for loving people others don't approve of.
Don't you talk like that to me.
Irene's voice shook, but whether from anger or something else, Meg couldn't tell. A strange numbness coursed through Meg's blood, and she suddenly felt incredibly sad.
Whatever, Mom. Pull your head out of your ass and look around. There are a lot of people out there who don't conform to your norms or your expectations. Just because they don't doesn't make them bad or evil or wrong. It just makes them different. As long as nobody's getting hurt, why the hell do you care what people do?
I don't have to listen to this, she threatened. Your offensive language and your unnatural views.
No, you don't. So hang up. Meg waited, but Irene stayed on the line because Meg heard her breathing. She forged on.
Go ahead and believe what you want. Believe what all your friends say about gay people, because all that shit is wrong. I know for a fact,
because I am gay. And I'm not sick or unnatural or deviant. And none of my gay friends are like that. And I have lots of straight friends who know what you believe is wrong too. And they're going to come to my commitment ceremony, and they're going to celebrate the day and be really happy for me and Gina, even though we can't get married yet.
Well, I hope you're happy with those people,
Irene almost spat.
Because you're probably all going to hell.
I'm extremely happy. I used to wish you could be one of those people. I stopped a while back because it was clear I was not what you wanted. But no matter how hard you try to block it out, the fact is, I'm your daughter. I'm the one who lived.
How dare you bring that up? You don't know anything about what I went through.
She softened her tone. You're right. I don't know. I'm sure it was horrible. I wouldn't wish that on anyone. But you've got one who made it, and I'm right here. I graduated at the top of my class for both my bachelor's and my DVM. I work hard. I take care of other people's animals, their livelihood out here. I help Dad every chance I get. I mentor students. I write research papers to advance knowledge in my field. And I met an amazing woman who loves all of that about me, who loves me for who I am. I'm more than your narrow views, and I wish you'd get past that. Irene started to cry.
How could you do this to me?
She said over and over.
Why can't you be normal?
Meg's chest constricted. I am normal. There are all kinds of normal, and I'm in there.
Why?
Irene said with a little groan.
Why must you continue down this path? I just want you to be safe.
The years of disappointment and tension Meg harbored toward Irene and toward their problematic relationship crawled up her throat. I'm sorry I'm not who you wanted as a daughter. That's not my fault. But maybe if you'd give yourself the chance to find out who I am, you'd be okay with me. I wish you would. Dad's told me a lot about you, and I think I'd actually like you as a person. But it's not going to happen because you can't get past your own biases. I am who I am, and I'm healthy and happy. If that's not good enough for you, that's too bad. Good luck, Mom. I hope you get out of life what you want. And Meg quietly hung up, shaking, feeling a numbness that left her cold, but also a deep relief that left her lighter. She went out back, needing to feel the Wyoming night and the distant comfort of a billion stars. She inhaled deeply, allowing the dark to calm her, and watched the sky for a while until she heard her cell phone ringing from the kitchen table, Gina's ring. Meg smiled and went inside. Hey, she answered. Hiya, cowgirl. Have I told you lately how much I love you? Meg closed her eyes, still smiling. I believe you did this morning. But say it again, because I will never get tired of hearing it. I love you more than Nona's marinara. Holy shit, Meg laughed. Now that's love. Yep. So how are you?
Missing you, loving you, completely amazed still that you said yes.
Meg stood in the doorway, watching the sky again.
I wanted to. I so wanted you to ask me to come to Wyoming, Gina said, a smile in her voice. I didn't want to push you, though. I told you I'd wait. However long it took, and I meant that.
Good thing I realized the error of my ways.
Meg leaned against the door jamb. And asked before you turned 100. Gina laughed.
Well, that might have put a little damper on our honeymoon. I'd need extra coffee, maybe, to get going.
A shooting star tracked across the sky, splitting the dark momentarily like a flare. Meg sent it on its way with a little message of hope.
I think you'd get going just fine, Ms. Morelli. Past experience with you demonstrates that quite well.
She smiled at the heat building at her core.
So, tell me about your day, future wife of mine. Spare me no detail, even the boring ones.
God, I love how that sounds. And I love you more than Nona's marinara and her tiramisu.
I love you right back, and I won't tell your grandma about your traitorous ways.
Thank God.
Gina pretended to be relieved.
So it all started this morning when I was packing up some other things in my apartment and my neighbor fell down the stairs.
Shit, was he okay?
Yeah, but the cake he was carrying wasn't.
Meg giggled. The stuff of life, she thought, begins with things like this. She settled into the sound of Gina's voice.
the warmth she heard coursing through the phone, and the memories they shared as well as the ones they had yet to make. And when she told Gina what happened with Irene, told her that she finally let her mom know where she stood, Meg felt a letting go, an anchor pulling free, and it offered no resistance as it trailed after a star that blazed its way across the night sky.
Chapter 38.
Hey, Doc, anything else?
Meg looked at Haley, who stood in her office doorway, then glanced at her watch.
Hold on.
She pushed back from her desk and stood. She then remembered Haley's paperwork and she reached for a red folder that sat on top of a stack of veterinary journals.
Here are the forms signed and ready for your advisor. Have him call me if he has any questions.
Meg handed the whole file to her.
Thanks. Wow, this is so great. Another internship with you. Thank you so much.
Meg smiled. It'll be good to have you aboard. Mooney's not the best help, sadly, she said, shaking her head. He tries with Kelly and Nicole, but she just can't get him to use proper technique in surgery. Haley grinned. Tell me again when classes start for fall semester. Meg reached for her lab coat, which she'd flung over one of the chairs in front of her desk. Crazy. August already.
Monday the 17th.
The week after Gina's birthday.
Excellent.
As soon as you know what your schedule is, bring it on in and we'll set you up with some regular hours. How are you with funding?
I'm okay. I do a little bit of work study in the department, and I have scholarships.
Meg looked her in the eye. You sure? If not, let me know and my dad and I will put you to work for us over breaks and some weekends. Surprise lit up her eyes.
Wow. No, I'm okay right now. But I'll let you know if that changes. Really, I will.
I'm going to hold you to that, Meg said with mock sternness. We're a crazy bunch, the DR, but anybody willing to help out gets a fair shake. And I know my dad misses having younger people around. He's a softie that way. Haley nodded. Make sure you let me know when you're applying to CSU. We'll deal with that and the reciprocal arrangements with Wyoming when it's time. Let me know when you need letters of recommendation. I'll write one, and so will Sean.
For sure, Haley said, grateful. I'm waiting for the materials. I want to start applying the end of the month.
Good for you. I hope you get in. Because I think you'd be a hell of an asset to any clinic. Keep that in mind. Especially when I get my own place off the ground. Which will be a while, but know you've always got a place there. Haley's eyes widened.
For real?
Absolutely. And down the line, if you want another internship or some kind of practicum or whatever, let me know and we'll figure something out. Or I can set you up in Fort Collins with Sean. She'd love to have you aboard. Haley stood staring at her for a moment.
Thanks, Doc. I can't tell you how great it's been working here.
No problem. You have a real talent with animals, and I want to make sure you get to use it. Plus, it would be great to have more talented vets in Wyoming, but that's long-term stuff. Let's focus on short-term for the moment. Get that paperwork in.
Yes, ma'am.
For a brief moment, she looked like she might cry.
Oh, that reminds me.
Meg ducked back into her office and opened a plain white box on her desk, the size of a ream of paper. She looked through the envelopes until she found the right one. She took it out and returned to the hallway. All right, it's my turn to get a little embarrassed. She handed the envelope to Haley. I haven't mailed these out yet, and Gina would kill me if she knew because I was supposed to do it a few days ago. She shrugged sheepishly. But if you and Beth aren't busy October 3rd, it'd be great if you could come to our ceremony. Haley carefully withdrew the invitation, on off-white linen cardstock embossed with an elegant script, encircled with a lariat in turn held by a pen and ink drawing of a mounted cowgirl in the lower left corner.
I love this,
she said, pointing at the cowgirl.
I'll ask Beth. And I'm pretty sure she'll say yes, especially since it's a Saturday. Thanks.
Just let me know before September 5th and check in with me as soon as you get a chance about hours for the semester.
Will do.
Haley slid the invitation back into its envelope. She tapped it against her thigh, looking at the floor. Meg waited. She looked up.
Thanks, Dr. T, for everything.
You're welcome. And one of these days, I hope to get you to call me Meg.
Sure thing, Dr. Meg.
Haley flashed her a grin and turned on her boot heel toward the door to the reception area. Have a good weekend, Meg said.
You too. Talk to you soon.
she called as she pushed through the door. Meg waved at her. She checked her watch again and took her phone off her belt. She punched a number and waited.
"Hey, cowgirl of my dreams," Gina answered.
"Hi, hun. What are we doing for dinner tonight?" Meg still tingled at the sound of Gina's voice and her terms of endearment.
"I so love it when you call me that," Gina said softly.
And sweetheart,
I just know you haven't mailed those invites yet."
Meg winced. Thank God she did better with the rings and the caterers.
"But I still love you madly," she said with a chuckle.
"I'm sorry, I've been
busy, I know. Don't worry about it. When you get a chance, okay?"
"Will do." Meg went back into her office, grinning at full wattage. She glanced at the boxes against the back wall that held Gina's birthday present, a new laptop and printer. Meg planned to sneak it all into the house after the weekend, probably on Tuesday, the day before her birthday.
"Dinner," Gina said. "Here's what's on. Sean and Ted are coming up. She just called me, and you know how she is. They want to celebrate the 1 week anniversary of my moving to Wyoming. They want to do this with pizza. So on your way home..."
Meg laughed. "God, they're easy. And welcome to my world. I will indeed pick up a couple of pizzas. Did she say if Ted wanted beer?" Meg idly picked up a pen from her desk and tapped it against her thigh.
"She said she'd take care of it. And I love your world, especially since you're in it. And give Phil a call. He's interested in chatting with you about your long-term plans for a clinic. He said he tried to reach you on your cell, but wasn't sure he got through."
"Cool. Oh, and you're hired. I need a good personal assistant."
"Well, since I am looking for some kind of gainful employment beyond freelancing, I think we can work something out. But I'm not sure I want a salary."
Gina's tone poured like warm syrup over Meg's bones. Meg swallowed. "Oh?
I can think of some other ways to reimburse me for my services. I'll show you after Ted and Sean leave. I hope you're up for it."
Heat rushed into Meg's cheeks.
"You're blushing. You're so cute when you do that," Gina said. "My sweet, tough cowgirl wife-to-be."
Gina's words stopped Meg's breath. She shut her eyes, grinning so wide it hurt.
"Damn,"
she finally managed. "Okay, back to work, then to pizza. I'll see you around 6.
"Yes, you will,"
Gina said with a laugh.
"I love you."
"I love you back. Now go save somebody's pet. Bye."
"Bye."
Meg hung up and sat on the edge of her desk. Wife to be. Wow. She exhaled and picked up the box of invitations and took it to the receptionist's area.
"Ginny, will you please remind me to mail these after work?"
Ted pulled away from the curb, and he and Sean waved. Meg waved back and went inside, a delicious little pang bouncing through her heart as she listened to Gina cleaning up in the kitchen singing Sarah McLachlan's Ice Cream. Meg looked at the boxes stacked against the wall down the hall and the clutter of Gina's things wrestling for space in various corners. She still had stuff in storage in California, but she said she'd go through it after the new year when things had calmed down a bit. Besides, she told Meg, it was mostly shit from her travels, and there was no point unpacking it. They were going to move to a bigger place.
Move to a bigger place.
Meg's heart rate sped up. Next weekend, she and Gina were going to Fort Collins to look at furniture and dishes, she grinned, looking at Gina's things in her house, loving how it took up space, how it broadcast Gina's presence in her life. She felt at once secure and aroused as she went into the kitchen.
"That pesto pizza is damn good," Gina said,
not looking up from the sink as Meg entered. Meg offered an affirmative and opened the back door for moonshine. A late summer breeze entered, carrying the first hints of autumn in its undercurrents.
"Yeah, who knew you could get pizza that good in Wyoming?"
Meg teased. "Probably some Italian in the owner's background somewhere,"
Meg laughed. "Probably. So are you okay going to Fort Collins for your birthday?" she asked, leaning back against the counter. Gina reached over and put a plate in the drying rack.
"Of course, why?"
she regarded Meg.
"Oh, it's a school night. If you don't want to go, we'll schedule for Friday instead of Wednesday, which does kind of suck as a birthday night, I know."
"No, it's fine," Meg smiled.
I just don't want you to feel obligated because it's Sean and Ted. Gina washed another plate in the sink.
I like them. They're a blast.
Meg nodded absently and watched Gina for a while, letting her gaze drop from Gina's face to her shoulder, then down the line of her torso where it lingered on her hip, before it plummeted along the fabric of her shorts to her left shin and calf, whose scar reminded Meg every day of what she'd nearly lost. The stirring at her core increased.
What's up?
Gina asked, still focused on the dishes. Meg smiled at how easy it was for her to read even the silences between them.
I just really love seeing you here.
Gina dipped a glass in the rinse sink and put it in the rack.
I love being here.
Good.
Meg crossed her arms. I saw a friend of Kate's at Grand Avenue when I went to pick up the pizzas. But it's weird. It's like I don't even know who that Meg was. I think about it, and it's like watching a movie of something. She studied Gina's face. I can't even imagine that I was ever without you. It's like it was just a long-distance relationship between us or something.
I know, Gina said softly.
She held Meg's gaze and reached for another plate. Meg moved and took the plate out of Gina's hand. She set it back on the counter, allowing everything she felt to wash through her. She ran her fingers up Gina's arm.
Seeing you in my, now our, kitchen is making me hot, Meg said.
She pushed Gina's back against the counter and pressed against her.
Huh.
Gina's tone pretended polite interest.
Actually, seeing you anywhere makes me hot.
Meg leaned in and traced Gina's ear with her tongue.
Hell, thinking about you makes me hot.
Gina made a little sound, and Meg slid her hands to Gina's hips, then around to the front of her shorts. Meg quickly unbuttoned them as she nuzzled Gina's neck. Gina rubbed her hands lightly across Meg's back. She gasped softly, tilting her head. Meg ran her fingers along the waistband of Gina's underwear and her heart pounded.
Sometimes I can't believe you're here,
she said as she brushed light kisses across Gina's jaw. She inhaled deeply.
I love the way you smell, the way you feel. Everything about you moves me.
Keep talking like that, Gina said with a soft groan, and I'll marry you.
She held Meg hard against her, holding her groin to Meg's, and an insistent throb between Meg's thighs demanded attention.
I'm so wet,
Meg whispered, as she lightly kissed Gina's throat.
And I want you so bad.
She delicately bit Gina's neck, keeping her braced against the counter.
I definitely like this side of you.
She pulled Meg's shirt out of her jeans and unfastened them, working the zipper open. Meg ran her hands underneath Gina's t-shirt and unhooked her bra so she could cup her breasts. She squeezed gently, teased her nipples with her palms. Gina made a sound low in her throat and pushed against Meg's hands.
Touch me.
Meg whispered against Gina's ear as she shifted, providing easier access. Gina slid her hand inside Meg's jeans and worked her fingers past the seam of Meg's underwear.
Oh my God, Gina said,
and Meg grinned at the expression on her face as her fingers explored the heat and moisture between Meg's thighs. Meg moved again, and Gina's fingers lightly grazed her clit. Meg sighed, breath hitching with Gina's touch. Meg leaned in and kissed her, slow and deep, pushing her tongue past Gina's teeth. Gina moaned into Meg's mouth as she pushed two fingers into Meg's depths. Meg exhaled sharply and made an involuntary exclamation against Gina's mouth as Gina filled her. She released Gina's lips and began to thrust against Gina's hand. Frustrated, she pulled her hands from beneath Gina's shirt and, with Gina's help, managed to push her jeans and underwear down past her hips so they clung instead to her thighs.
Much better,
Gina said, voice husky.
About that personal assistant gig,
Meg whispered. She slid her hand inside Gina's underwear.
You still up for that?
Definitely.
Gina closed her eyes, and Meg lifted Gina's tee above her breasts with her free hand and took one of her nipples into her mouth, tasting salt from the sweat that was collecting on Gina's chest.
God, yes,
Gina groaned, breathing ragged. She held Meg's head against her chest with her free hand. Meg slid two fingers into Gina's slick, wet heat, positioning herself,
so she didn't interrupt what Gina was doing to her.
Good,
she said as she skimmed kisses across Gina's breasts,
because it's a lot of work.
The pressure of Gina's hand on her clit set off little fireworks through her veins.
You feel so good.
Meg closed her eyes, riding Gina's hand. Still teasing Gina's nipples with her tongue and teeth, she stopped as another pleasurable surge raced up, then back down her spine.
And it's long hours, she groaned. Guaranteed physical labor, too.
Gina's fingers inside her caused her breath to catch in her throat and sweat to gather along the ridges of bone and muscle across her back. She pulled her mouth off Gina's breast and unsnapped her own shirt with her free hand. She pressed her chest against Gina's.
Hard work, Meg said, nearly breathless, a teasing edge to her voice.
Oh, don't worry, Gina growled in her ear. I'm so ready.
Meg pulled her fingers out halfway, then plunged them in again. Gina gasped.
Prove it,
Meg challenged, grinning. Gina raised one eyebrow, and her dark eyes sparkled.
Just hang on,
she said as she wrapped her fingers in Meg's hair and gently pulled her head back so she could kiss Meg's neck. Meg groaned, and Gina let go of her hair and kissed her hard on the lips. Meg felt the ache between her legs build, and she dug her fingers into Gina's shoulder with her free hand.
Like that,
Gina murmured against her mouth.
Just like that.
Her breathing sped up, and Gina contracted around Meg's fingers, drew them deeper within, and opened completely to her thrusts, even as Meg did the same with Gina's fingers, trying to pull her deeper inside. Gina cupped the back of Meg's neck with her free hand and stared into Meg's eyes. She started, then clenched her teeth, trying to keep her eyes open. Meg watched her, saw a spring uncoil in her eyes.
I'm right here,
Meg said softly, even as her own climax roared through her veins.
With you.
She kept her eyes locked on Gina's and somehow managed to remain on her feet as a tide slammed through her, then receded, leaving her limbs exquisitely heavy. Gina whispered Meg's name and collapsed against her, and Meg shifted to keep her braced against the counter so she wouldn't stumble. Gina sighed and leaned her forehead on Meg's shoulder for a long moment before looking up again. She brushed Meg's hair, damp from their exertions, out of her face. The expression in her eyes said more than words ever could. Meg smiled.
You're everything to me.
She gently extricated herself so she could wrap both arms around her.
Everything.
Gina slowly pulled her own fingers out and hugged Meg close, resting her head on Meg's shoulder.
I love you, cowgirl, she whispered.
I love you back.
Meg tightened her hold, and they stood like that for a while until Meg broke the silence.
You think you might want to stay over?
She kissed Gina's forehead, breathing her essence in the musky odor of sex that clung to their skin and clothing.
Till the cows come home driving Cadillacs.
So if they show up in Fords,
nope, no deal.
Well, that's good. Gives me some leeway. Meg stroked Gina's back, lost in how their bodies fit together, like two halves of a map finally reattached. Gina sighed contentedly before she started singing softly against Meg's chest.
If I fall, I'm bringing you with me, she sang,
making her own lyrics to a Dixie Chicks tune.
You're coming home with me, baby, heart and all.
Chapter 39.
Shit,
Meg muttered, looking at herself in the floor-length mirror.
Does this look all right?
She asked louder.
Girl, get out here and let's have a look,
Sean said, laughing. Meg smoothed her vest, but left the top three buttons undone. She brushed lint off her black wool trousers, then went into the other room.
Seriously, how do I look? Because I am so fucking nervous right now that I'm practically about to throw up.
Sean stared.
Good God, that's it. I'm leaving, Ted. Hell, for one night with you looking like that, all straight women would abandon ship.
Whatever.
A little help? Meg, as much as you won't admit it, you're a total hottie. And it's not just because you're a good-looking woman. It's because you've got that damn cowgirl vibe, which turns mere mortals to jelly.
She finished buttoning Meg's vest,
sleek and black, whose Victorian cut and lapels gave it an old-fashioned Western flair.
God, this looks good on you,
Sean said under her breath as she turned Meg around and adjusted the strap and buckle on the back.
I love this. It's so frontier. I'm so glad you went with this.
She turned Meg back around and studied her for a moment.
And this shirt?
She reached under the bottom of Meg's vest and pulled her shirt down slightly, then smoothed the front of the vest.
That pattern is amazing, like what you'd see in a saloon. I love the banded collar. And the color is totally cool. It matches your eyes. Girl, I'm swooning here.
All right, all right. Meg rolled her eyes, embarrassed but enjoying Sean's reaction. Pants, hair? Sean giggled, and her gaze swept down to the floor, to Meg's traditional black cowboy boots, polished to a high sheen.
Nice toe caps. They match your belt buckle. You look better with silver accents than gold, I think. Good choice. I meant to tell you that about the rings, too. I love me some white gold.
She turned her attention to Meg's hair.
Come here.
Meg followed her back into the bedroom, where Sean picked up a comb off the dresser and fussed a bit with her hair.
Wow, it's gotten long. It's practically past your shoulders, but I like it. That's a relief, because I seriously doubt I've time to drive my ass to Saratoga to get it trimmed. Please, somebody on this ranch has the skills to do that for you. All I'd have to do is put out the call and a bunch of people would show up with scissors.
That's what I'm afraid of. Sean laughed and put the comb back on the end table. She stood studying Meg.
Okay, don't just take my word for it. Hold on.
She left and Meg went back into the living room of her dad's place, let her gaze track over the walls. Already she could tell Alice lived here with him. No more clutter. She smiled and looked at the Western style and Native American art pieces that adorned the rustic furnishings. A framed poster hung over the mantel. Meg hadn't noticed it when she came in to dress. She walked over to it. As she neared, she realized it was a photograph enlarged to poster size. A picture of Stan standing next to Meg, who was 5 at the time. She was wearing jeans, a long-sleeved plaid shirt, and little black ropers. A black cowboy hat perched on her head as she watched him showing her how to hold a lasso. He was smiling, and she looked like she was concentrating. She stared at the image and remembered the patience he had with her, showing her proper methods, using a sawhorse with a cow skull wired to one end. She'd worked hours almost every day on her technique, both hands. And on the mantle stood 5 of her trophies, including all-county roping champion, which she won as a junior and again as a senior in high school. She tried barrel racing in junior high. Those trophies sat on a small shelf near the fireplace.
Honey, we're home,
Sean announced as she opened the front door, followed by Mary, Angelica, Marcella, Grace, and Luisa. Marcella and Luisa wore dresses, but the daughters wore pantsuits. Mary wore cowboy boots, as did Grace.
Great, the entire matriarchy. Thanks, Sean. Hey, you didn't seem to believe me about your dashing appearance, ladies.
Sean moved her arm like a game show host.
Good Lord, Mary said. How the hell did Gina get so damn lucky? Meg, you have to have a twin sister you're hiding. Give her up, now.
Meg blushed furiously, which sent Marcella to laughing.
You embarrass so easily. Turn around, please. Let us all see.
Meg complied, and Luisa said something in emphatic Italian. Angelica and Grace started laughing, and Mary snorted. Meg looked over her shoulder, questioning.
She said it's too bad she's so much older. She'd consider leaving the church for you, Angelica translated.
Meg swallowed. Jeez, she muttered, and Luisa laughed, eyes twinkling.
You look really good, Grace said, nodding. That ensemble is you.
I told you.
Sean's voice held a triumphant note.
All right, thank you all for your expert opinions. Now you know the kind of work you have to do to get Gina up to speed.
Angelica shook her head sadly.
That's a tall order, Sean. We'll try.
She flashed a smile at Meg and led the entourage out the door. Sean closed it behind them.
Where's your frock coat, darling?
Sean drawled the words like a southern belle. Meg motioned at the bedroom, and Sean left to get it. She returned within seconds and held it while Meg inserted her arms into the sleeves and shrugged into the shoulders. Sean stepped back.
Oh, hell yeah.
Meg, that is totally rockin'. You look like a Western sheriff or a vigilante, which is so entirely sexy because you could be either, depending on your mood. Hell, all you need now are pearl-handled Colts. Yum.
She leaned in and brushed something off Meg's left shoulder. When she looked up, Meg saw tears in her eyes.
Are you okay? Sean smiled. I'm just so happy for you. And I'm so proud of you for taking the bull by the horns and letting Gina in.
She wiped her eyes.
God, I'm such a baby.
Meg hugged her.
Thanks for being my bestest friend and my maid of honor. I kept hoping,
Sean sighed.
You know I secretly harbored this desire to be just that at your wedding, or best man, whichever.
You never told me, Meg said with a laugh.
And jinx it? Are you crazy?
She pushed Meg away.
Do I pass muster? Can you be seen in public with me?
She twirled, her light Western-style skirt fluttering. Nice boots, Meg smiled. They look like you use them. Sean smacked Meg lightly on the arm.
Ow, just for that.
Sean raised her eyebrow with an expression that could bring immediate order to rowdy classrooms. You look fabulous, Meg relented, grinning. Beautiful. If I didn't have Gina, I might just make a play for you.
Whatever. Hell and high water won't come between you two. All right, now stay right here, Dr. Horsechick. I'll go see how things are proceeding.
Meg nodded. As soon as Sean shut the door, she started pacing. She looked at her watch. 2:30. In a half hour, she'd be walking out to stand in front of a crowd of people and declare her love and devotion to the most wonderful woman she had ever met. She paced all over the living room, but did notice, in spite of her increasing nervousness, that Alice had put more photos out showing Meg from her younger years. Her first time on a horse alone at age 3, rolling around to the meadow with 3 cattle dogs Meg recognized as Jibby, Tracer, and Howdy. 10 years old at a branding. She moved to another photo. Meg at her high school graduation in Saratoga. Black hat and black boots. Some things clearly never changed. Another set of photos of her in college, and then in vet school. Graduation from vet school. She shifted her eyes to the next image and caught her breath. Gina standing with her outside the lodge, goofing off during their first summer together. Meg had her arms around Gina's waist, and Gina had Meg's cowboy hat on her head at a jaunty angle. Alice had taken that photo. The door opened, and Meg looked up.
Are you just about... Oh, honey!
Alice stood regarding her, shaking her head with a broad smile on her face.
You look beautiful. Just beautiful.
Her eyes shined, and Meg smiled back.
Thanks, Alice. You look wonderful yourself.
Meg liked the old west cut of Alice's dress. The cornflower blue brought out her eyes.
It's just about time, Alice said, hands on her hips.
She wore her hair down today, and Meg was struck by how curly it was. She looked 10 years younger.
Can I just say that I'm so glad you and Dad finally hooked up?
Alice grinned. You and me both.
He's a tough one to catch, though.
Dad? Hard to get? Meg chuckled.
Nah, just clueless.
She joined Alice at the door and removed her black Stetson from one of the pegs. Alice smiled.
True.
She stood looking at her.
Ah, the dress hat. Very nice. Put it on.
Meg dipped her head and placed the hat on her head, a practiced, habitual motion that always positioned it just right. Alice let her breath out between her teeth.
You become such a fine woman, Meg. I'm proud to know you. And I'm so glad you and Gina found each other. I'm looking forward to having you two around.
Meg cleared her throat, fighting tears. She hugged Alice.
Thanks for taking care of Dad. I know I've never had to worry about him with you here.
Pshaw, girl. Tweren't nothing to it.
She raised her eyebrows and motioned toward the door.
All right, let's get you married off.
Her eyes twinkled with excitement and amusement. Meg took a deep breath and followed Alice outside, into the early October sun. She clenched and unclenched her hands, not sure what to do with them. She smoothed the front of her vest, then her jacket as she walked. She heard faint music and voices, along with laughter. She and Gina had decided to hold the ceremony in the meadow behind the lodge, where they'd be treated to a panoramic view of the Eastern Medicine Bows. She headed across the parking circle, just as Sean and Stan rounded the corner of the lodge and approached.
Girl, your timing is perfect. Come on.
Sean looped her arm through Meg's right arm, and Stan looped his through her left. Alice took Stan's left arm.
Honey, you look great, Stan said, patting her hand. Hell, I'm getting all choked up and the damn thing hasn't even started.
Dad, you look amazing. Wow.
He glanced at her and grinned. He wore a gleaming white tuxedo shirt and a vest the same color blue as Alice's dress. His dark gray trousers matched his hat, and Meg noticed he was wearing his traditional black boots as well.
I clean up pretty good, huh?
He asked. Meg bumped him playfully.
About as well as I do, I guess.
He bumped her back, then went serious for a moment and released her arm so he could face her.
I want to be clear that I'm sorry your mom made the choice she did. I hope someday she comes around. But I don't want you to think that it's something you need to chase after. You can only do that so much. Focus on what you've got and take care of the relationships that make you happy. You've got a lot of love around you today. Don't forget that.
He smiled and took her arm in his again.
Thanks, she said, touched.
Speech done. Let's get this rodeo started.
They passed the lodge arm in arm, and Meg gasped at the number of people gathered in the meadow. She knew how many had RSVP'd. She just didn't realize what that would look like when they were all gathered.
Wow, she whispered again. God, I'm so nervous.
You'll do fine, Stan said.
You'll be awesome,
Sean concurred as she moved closer.
Lordy, I'm crying already.
She wiped at her face with her free hand. Ted stood waiting at the fringes of the crowd, wearing jeans and cowboy boots with his tuxedo jacket and cummerbund. He, too, wore a cowboy hat, and it looked good on him, Meg thought.
There's my best man, Meg laughed. Join my posse, sir, she said as they approached.
He looked her up and down.
Good thing I'm not a lesbian. I'd give Gina a run for her money.
He looped his left arm with Sean's right, and she stuck her tongue out at him.
And me, handsome,
Sean teased as the crowd parted for them. Meg smiled and nodded at the assembled guests if she caught their eyes. She recognized most of Gina's relatives and friends, though many she didn't know very well. Four of her cousins and their families were in attendance from Gina's father's side of the family. Several cousins couldn't come for various reasons, but they sent their blessings. Her father's brother Jed and his wife nodded at her, smiling. Her friends and colleagues from vet school and college cheered as she passed, and she felt another flush zoom up her neck. Roy and Cynthia waved. Ginny smiled at her, and all the vet techs did fist pumps. Mark couldn't make it, but he sent his best. Randy was there with his wife, and they waved. Meg glanced to her left, and her gaze met Haley's. Meg grinned at her and Beth. They waved, obviously excited. A few guests whom Meg had come to know over the years had also shown up, including Marjorie, who waved ecstatically and blew her a kiss as Meg passed. Meg laughed and lifted her head to the breeze and sniffed as they walked, noting the shift in seasons and the faint, crisp odor of fallen leaves carried from the mountains and the cold undertones of the snow that already capped the tallest peaks. The meadow's grasses had given their green to next year's spring, and their stalks rustled against each other with a sound like dry reeds. An autumn evening lingered just behind the late afternoon sun, and Meg sought building in the shadows that slanted from the west across the tops of the mountains. A perfect day. They neared the wooden platform, 30 yards from the lodge, where she and Gina would exchange vows. Jackson and Stan had built it, 5 feet square, accessible with 3 wooden steps from all 4 sides. Margaret Gates, a solid matronly Unitarian minister from Laramie, stood beaming at her. Meg's heart pounded and her knees nearly buckled. She was glad to have her dad and Sean on either side of her, because she was sure if they weren't, she'd be face down on the trampled grass. She glanced to her right and saw a small knot of people approaching the platform through the crowd at a right angle to her, Gina's entourage, as she and Meg laughingly referred to the people who were to escort her from the motel part of the ranch. Meg's group stopped at the base of the steps. Sean and Stan released her and moved aside. Someone turned the music off. Meg swallowed and waited the few seconds for Gina's group to arrive. She kept her eyes focused on Margaret, because she knew if she looked over toward Gina, she really would collapse. Margaret caught her eye and nodded once, and Meg ascended at roughly the same time Gina did, her boot heels nearly matching the cadence of Meg's on the wood. Meg took her position to Margaret's right and allowed herself finally to look at Gina. Oh my God, she nearly passed out at the sight. Meg tried to swallow, but her mouth and throat had gone dry. She watched as Gina took her position to Margaret's left. Meg stared at her, stomach flip-flopping, heart slamming her ribs. Gina wore black tuxedo pants, black tails, a bone-white shirt, and a deep blue vest that shimmered in the sunlight. Instead of a tie, she wore an oval-shaped brooch at her throat, dominated by a smooth black stone. Meg guessed was onyx, set in sterling silver. Meg saw cufflinks that matched the brooch, peeking beneath the ends of Gina's jacket sleeves. Her hair fell around her shoulders, like it had that day just over 10 years ago, when she brushed it out of her face to look up at Meg the first time they met. Gina stood, hands clasped in front of her. She caught Meg's gaze and held it, smiling, and Meg saw the years they shared in her eyes, the strength of the connection between them, and the light of future dreams. She stared, powerless to do anything but smile back.
"Welcome," Margaret started as she opened her slim black binder, "to this magnificent day and this beautiful proclamation between two wonderful people."
She too wore black trousers and cowboy boots. A tan blazer covered her denim shirt, and she wore her vestments draped around her neck, a white scarf, tasseled ends decorated with rainbow stripes.
"We have come here today in a community of love," Margaret continued, "in celebration of this occasion, recognizing the solemnity and responsibility that comes with the union of Meg and Gina, who seek to join their lives and build new roads into the future. We recognize also the sheer joy of that union, in the coming together of two people in the fulfillment of their love for each other."
Meg knew the ceremony. She and Gina helped write it, but she couldn't, for the life of her, stay focused on it, because she kept stealing glances at Gina, kept seeing her in the parking lot of Saratoga Feed, kept remembering the instant Gina's gaze latched onto hers. From that moment, Meg thought, from that moment on, she'd loved her. Margaret's voice, a rich, mellow alto no doubt affected when she worked a pulpit, rose in a certain cadence, and Meg snapped back to the ceremony.
"This adventure, this wonderful, exciting adventure, begins with the honesty between Meg and Gina and among all of you who witness this event. Be it known here that the responsibility for the integrity of this covenant rests upon their own hearts and upon the hearts of you, friends and relatives in the community. We are thus gathered here to join Meg and Gina in the recognition of their love and partnership."
Margaret paused, and Meg responded to the cue, taking Gina's hands in hers. The warmth emanating from them shot up Meg's arms. They'd rehearsed the ceremony. Meg knew her vows, had already inscribed them onto her heart. But for a long moment, she completely lost her mind, staring into Gina's eyes. Gina must have noticed because she winked, and Meg stifled a laugh as she snapped back to attention. She cleared her throat as Margaret continued.
"Meg Anders Talmadge, will you take Gina Luisa Morelli to be your life partner?"
Meg's heart jumped into her throat. "Oh, hell yes," she grinned. "I will." Her voice rang out sure and steady. She gently squeezed Gina's hands, looked into her eyes, and fell into the secret places she saw there. The words came easily then. "Gina," Meg said, "from this day forward, I choose to walk this path with you, no matter the outcome, sharing in your joys and sorrows, in sickness and in health, offering my strength, friendship, and love. I will honor and respect the unique person you are and work with you in partnership, even as I support the ways that you seek to grow as an individual. I will stand with you, learn with you, be with you," Meg paused, allowed herself to savor this moment. "Gina, you are my soulmate, my closest friend, my companion, my greatest love. To you I pledge my faith, love, and devotion. To you I pledge my whole self, heart to soul," she paused for effect. "My whole self, from the hat down." Whispers and giggles broke out in the crowd. "I love you, Gina,
and I can't wait to share the ride. A flutter of applause accompanied the end of Meg's vows. Margaret turned to Gina, waiting a moment for Gina to wipe the tears that tracked down her cheeks. Gina drew a shaky breath and glanced at Margaret. She nodded once and turned back to look into Meg's eyes. Meg held her breath. The whole world disappeared, narrowed to Gina and the heat of her hands and Meg's fingers.
Gina Luisa Morelli,
Margaret said, will you take Meg Andrews Talmadge to be your life partner? Fresh tears gathered in Gina's eyes. Her face lit up with her smile.
I will.
And a single tear eased down Meg's cheek at the simple, absolute conviction in Gina's tone.
Meg, from this day forward, I choose to walk this path with you, no matter the outcome, sharing in your joys and sorrows, in sickness and in health, offering my strength, friendship, and love. I will honor and respect the unique person you are and work with you in partnership, even as I support the ways that you seek to grow as an individual.
She drew a shaky breath.
I will stand with you, learn with you, be with you. Meg, you are my soulmate, my closest friend, my companion. You're my greatest love. To you, I pledge my faith, love, and devotion. To you, I pledge my whole self, heart to soul, from the boots up.
She paused, holding Meg's gaze with hers.
I love you, Meg, and I can't wait to share the ride.
The last word floated in the air and cheers erupted. Meg glanced around, smiling through her tears. She maintained her hold on Gina's hands as they waited for the impromptu celebration to subside. Sean stood waiting at the foot of the steps behind Meg, and Mary stood opposite her, behind Gina. Margaret nodded, and both Sean and Mary ascended, each carrying a small black velvet box. Sean took a position on Meg's left, between her and Margaret, while Mary waited on Gina's right. Sean opened the box she held, and Meg released Gina's hands so she could remove the ring. She did, and Sean closed the box, smiling and silently crying. Meg winked at her, which only made her cry more. Gina, Meg said, she took Gina's left hand in her own left. I offer you this ring as a symbol of my love for you and our journey together. Meg positioned Gina's left hand in such a way that Gina's palm rested on Meg's. A ring is a circle, Meg continued, never ending, always beginning. With this ring, I offer you my hopes, my dreams, and my wishes to guide you, protect you, and provide you comfort, no matter where in the world you are. Meg slid the ring onto Gina's third finger, and Sean choked back a sob. Meg took Gina's hand and brought it to her lips, touching them lightly to the ring. Sean started crying harder, and a fresh round of tears trickled from Gina's eyes. Mary opened the box she held, and Gina let go of Meg's hands. She removed the ring inside, and Mary shut the box as Sean had done. Mary's lower lip quivered.
Meg, Gina said, taking Meg's left hand in hers, I offer you this ring as a symbol of my love for you and our journey together.
She guided Meg's hand into position, and Meg fought an urge to start whooping at the top of her lungs.
A ring is a circle, Gina continued, never ending, always beginning. With this ring, I offer you my hopes, my dreams, and my wishes to guide you, protect you, and provide you comfort, no matter where in the world you are.
She slid the ring into place on Meg's finger, and the sensation of the cool metal against Meg's skin and the power of this moment shook every foundation she had. She stared transfixed as Gina touched her lips to Meg's ring, her fingers gently holding her hand. Mary drew a whimpering breath and started crying as hard as Sean. Even Margaret looked a little teary, though Meg couldn't be sure, because her own tears blurred her vision. Margaret waited a moment before speaking. When she did, her voice resonated across the crowd, sending another chill down Meg's spine.
Meg and Gina, in front of this community of love, and with the authority I derive from my spiritual community and position, I invest this union with integrity through the love that you have for each other. I now pronounce you united in life partnership.
She stepped back, and Meg stared at Gina for a long time, dumbstruck, completely undone. Gina broke the tableau. She reached up and took Meg's hat off, and with her other hand at the back of Meg's neck,
She pulled her into a kiss that could turn tundra into tropics. Meg worked her arms around Gina and held her tightly as she melted into Gina's lips. Unaware of anything but Gina's mouth against hers, Gina's hand in her hair, Gina in her arms. When Gina finally pulled away, cheers and raucous whoops came rushing into Meg's perimeter, and she blinked as the world returned to real time. Both of Gina's arms went around her neck, and her lips brushed Meg's cheek.
"Wow," Meg said softly. "This is the most amazing moment of my life."
People crowded the platform, but Gina was the only thing that filled Meg's awareness. Gina smiled in such a way that Meg wondered how her knees didn't buckle. She brushed a tear off Meg's cheek.
"Mine too,"
Gina said in a tone that sounded almost shy. She leaned in and dropped her voice to a near whisper.
"Can I just say that the way you look makes me so damn weak that I'm barely able to stand here looking at you?"
Meg grinned. "Say it all you want. I must have fell off the platform when I saw you." Gina kissed her on the cheek and spoke softly against Meg's ear.
"Put your hat back on. Make me weaker."
"Will do, ma'am."
Meg took her Stetson from Gina and replaced it on her head. Someone turned on the music.
"Sounds like it's time for a party,"
a male voice shouted, and another round of cheers went up. The platform crowd dispersed on their way to the lodge, leaving Meg and Gina alone for a few minutes.
"What do you say, cowgirl? A little dancing?"
Gina stroked Meg's cheek.
"Hell yes."
Meg kissed Gina's fingertip as it lingered on her lips.
"I'll go easy on you, though," she added.
Gina raised an eyebrow with an "excuse me" expression.
"I don't want you to wear yourself out. You might need your strength later."
"Oh?"
Gina looked at her quizzically. Meg allowed a slow, cocky grin to lift the corners of her mouth.
"To keep up with me."
"As long as you leave your hat on."
Gina pulled Meg against her,
"but nothing else."
"I don't recall that being in our vows."
Meg slid her right arm around Gina and took her right hand in her left, swaying gently to the music.
"It's implied."
Meg rested her cheek against Gina's and closed her eyes, holding Gina's hand against her chest, above her heart. Gina's left hand rested on her shoulder. Meg exhaled softly.
"I'll leave whatever you want on or off.
I'll be taking you up on that."
They slow danced through another song until Gina's sister Grace addressed them.
Sorry to interrupt."
"No problem," Gina responded, still dancing with Meg.
"The photographer is waiting," she said apologetically.
"We'll be right there, 5 minutes.
Meg smiled down at her. Grace returned her smile and started walking back to the lodge.
5 minutes, What can we do in 5 minutes?
Meg murmured. Visions of Gina moving against her, kissing her, singing to her floated through her mind. Gina looked at her, and Meg was 25 again, following her out of the River Rest to the parking lot. Gina licked her lips and grinned.
"I'm going to make out with my wife."
"Huh, same here."
And then they stopped talking.
"So is the weather as shitty there as it is here?"
Stan said with a laugh.
"Completely, but it's kind of pretty."
Meg watched the snow fall in the ethereal light out the front window, big wide cotton ball flakes that added to the 8 inches already covering the ground. Gusts of wind pushed a miniature drift onto the porch. The footprints she'd left 4 hours earlier on the walk had nearly filled, leaving only faint impressions behind.
"Well, I'd sure like to see you and Gina, but I don't think Christmas dinner's in the stars for us this year."
He sounded disappointed.
"Unless a thaw takes hold tomorrow morning and clears the roads for the next day."
"We'll come for New Year's," Meg said. "Gina's looking forward to it. That's just next week."
"I know. It's okay, hon. I just wanted to spend your first married Christmas with you."
Meg smiled.
"We'll call you and Gina will sing a carol for you."
"I'll sing what?"
Gina asked from halfway down the hall.
"Silent Night. You know how that one goes.
Sound young virgin, slender and wild." Stan started laughing and Gina grinned. She kissed Meg on the cheek. She was wearing one of Meg's sweatshirts and a pair of baggy blue sweats, but she still looked amazing.
"Put that wife of yours on the phone,"
Stan commanded.
"Yes, sir."
Meg handed the phone to Gina. "Master of all he surveys wants to have a word with you." She took the phone.
"Hi, Dad, too. What's up?"
Meg grinned and went to the back door to let Moonshine and Booger in. She closed the door that separated the kitchen from the utility room so she could wipe them off before they went inside. Once done, she let them in, and they checked their respective food bowls before they went into the living room. Meg opened a kitchen cabinet and removed a box of arrowroot. Next, she took a container of Italian powdered chocolate out that Gina had brought from California, along with sugar and a small bottle of vanilla. She mixed the dry ingredients, arrowroot, cocoa, and sugar, in a saucepan. Then she added some water and stirred it in. She set the pan on the stove over low heat, listening to Gina talk and laugh and thinking there was nowhere else she'd rather be. She put two Italian cappuccino cups on the counter with their saucers and stirred more water into the saucepan, along with a cup of half and half. Gina walked past the kitchen doorway on her way to the back office, still talking to Stan. She blew Meg a kiss and winked. Meg grinned at her and continued stirring, watching as the mixture heated. After a few minutes, she dipped a spoon in and removed it, watching how the chocolate coated it. Done, she turned the heat off and poured the hot chocolate into the two cups. She'd gotten pretty good at this step and didn't leave drips. Meg set the pan on the stove and sprinkled nutmeg over the mixture in the cups. She garnished each with a peppermint stick and picked one cup up so she could take it to Gina in the office. Instead, Gina stood watching her from the doorway. Meg had been so absorbed in her chocolate ministrations, she hadn't heard her. Gina took the saucer and cup out of Meg's hands.
"Sit with me," she said, eyes shining.
Meg picked up the other cup and saucer from the counter and followed Gina to the living room, where they carefully sat on the new sofa, a deep red Nuovo European-style affair with clean lines. Meg especially liked how it could look at home in a bistro or a ranch house. Gina kept the cushions covered with Pendleton blankets, should the dogs decide to avail themselves of it. A matching chair stood at a right angle to the sofa's end, also covered in a Pendleton. Moonchen was sprawled on the rug near the coffee table, snoozing. Booger had made herself at home on the chair. Meg placed her cup and saucer on the new coffee table, whose surface was covered in festive tiles. Gina took a sip of hers.
"Damn, honey, I'll make an Italian out of you yet," she said appreciatively.
"An Italian cowgirl, huh? That could be a fun mix." Gina stirred her cocoa with a peppermint stick.
"Where do you think the term spaghetti western comes from?
Lesbian rancher types hooking up with Italian-American journalists?" Gina laughed.
"Picture this. There you are, out in the wild, riding fence on Destry, and you stop and build a fire so you can get your espresso going."
She looked at Meg over the rim of her cup, a little smile dancing at the corners of her mouth. Meg nodded sagely.
"And I'll always have a stash of biscotti. Here, little lady, almond anise for you and your horse there?"
Gina laughed. She put her cup down and leaned over so she could brush a kiss on Meg's cheek.
"I love you. I love you so much, I can't stand it."
"Enough to maybe move into a bigger house with me?"
Meg asked, raising her eyebrows, teasing.
"More than enough."
"Enough to listen to me complain about what a pain in the ass it is to move?"
"Well, we still have a few months before we have to do that. I mean, winter ends around here in, what, August? Plenty of time."
"Yes. Then we have the 2-week window of summer to get everything over to the new place."
"Sounds doable."
Meg reached over and brushed a lock of hair off Gina's forehead.
"So what did Dad think of the story?"
"He loved it," Gina grinned. "And guess what? My editor loved it. Another decade at the Diamond Rock. He just emailed me. He's sending me more work. He wants me to create this whole Way of the West series, and he's putting me in charge."
Meg sat back staring. "Are you serious?"
"Has a bad case of foot rot."
"Nice. You already sound like a rancher," Meg said, laughing. "And that is awesome news. The series, not the foot rot." She took Gina's hand. "Congratulations."
"It'll require some travel," Gina said, tentative.
"Whatever you need to do."
Meg ran her thumb along Gina's knuckles, along the ring on her finger. She loved seeing the ring on Gina's finger, loved seeing the one on her own.
"I told you. I'm your base.
I just don't want to be away from you for long. At all, actually."
Gina kissed Meg's hand. "We'll see how this goes. Maybe after I get some things in place, I won't have to travel too much.
And maybe you can come with me sometimes?"
She ended with a hopeful note.
"I'd like that."
"So hurry up and get Haley into vet school so she can run things while we gallivant all over the place."
Meg laughed and kissed her. What started as one turned into several, which happened quite a bit. She pulled away finally, breathing heavily. Gina pushed her back against the end of the couch, a gleam in her eyes that rendered Meg powerless.
So, Dr. Talmadge, seeing as how the weather precludes any sort of gallivanting at the moment, maybe you'd be amenable to some sort of substitute activities?
She raised an eyebrow and traced Meg's lower lip with her tongue, and it felt like a tiny fireball on Meg's mouth.
I might, Meg said,
pretending disinterest, though her heart pounded and she ached between her thighs.
What did you have in mind?
Gina picked up her cup and dipped the peppermint stick in the chocolate. She ran it gently over Meg's lips. Meg's blood galloped through her veins as Gina leaned in and sucked the chocolate slowly off her lips before pulling away.
God, I love snow days,
Gina said as a sultry smile lifted the corners of her mouth. She dipped the peppermint stick again.
Hold still, doctor. This won't hurt a bit. And then there was no more talking.
This has been an Audible Studios production of From the Boots Up and From the Hat Down. Written by Andy Marquette. Performed by Paige McKinney and Abby Creighton. Executive producers, Catherine Stewart and Mike Charzak. Producer, Chelsea Pita. From the Boots Up, copyright 2013 by Andy Marquette. From the Hat Down, copyright 2014. By Andy Marquette. Sound recording, copyright 2019 by Audible Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.